Morning.
Good morning.
We're here to start HRSD commission meeting. January 24th, 2023. Open participation and observation of all HRSD commission and committee meetings is available. Due to space limitations, we receive a length and attendance observation request recommendations to attend the meeting. First, please send your request to Jennifer in the future.
Okay.
All right, so let's get things off and started. Placeholder only if needed. We do in accordance with the code, Virginia Code 2.2-3708.3B and HRSD Remote Participation Commission adopted policy. Commissioner Glenn is requesting approval to participate in today's meeting from Norfolk, Virginia due to scheduling conflict. Is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Roll call.
You're actually way ahead of me. Give me one second.
All right.
Did you say you were the first one?
Yes, you listen, Tucker.
Thank you.
We'll do it by roll call.
Thank you. All right, roll call. Ellison.
Aye.
Glenn.
Yes.
Wallace.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Tarosky.
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Motion approved. Thank you, Ms. Cassio. I understand there are several members of the public participating virtually today. We thank you for your interest in observing the meeting. There are just a few reminders for today's meeting. Please keep your microphone on mute when not speaking. The audio of the meeting is being recorded for posting on our website. Before speaking, please first state your name. Cassio, call commissioner names for roll call vote on each agenda item requiring action. Only public comments pre-registered, Ms. Cassio, will be accepted during the call. I understand no one is registered to make a public comment today. Is that still stands?
That's correct.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Jay Burness, our general manager, is online, but he is not here with us. Today, filling in for him as a placeholder today would be Steve Demick. So Steve, I'll turn it over to you, sir, for awards and recognition.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, commissioners, and Happy New Year. Today, we have two new employees starting with us. We have a Mr. Keith Britt. He's the electrical manager and was recently hired in the electrical and instrumentation divisions of the operations department. He's a professional engineer with 15 years of experience in electrical design, inspection, maintenance, and troubleshooting of protective devices and electrical equipment. He graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering from Old Dominion University and a Master's of Engineering from Worcester Polytechnic Institute. He most recently worked for Dominion Energy at the Surrey Power Station in their electrical and design group. Keith, welcome to HRSD. Do you have anything you want to say to us?
Good morning. I just want to thank you all for the opportunity to introduce myself, and I appreciate everybody's work here at HRSD to get me up to speed and be able to be a strong contributor. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so we also have a Mr. Chris Swart in the hydraulic. He's a hydraulic analysis manager. He was recently hired in the planning and analysis division in our engineering department. He's also a licensed professional engineer. He's a project management professional and an envisioned sustainability professional with 15 years of experience. He has a bachelor's degree in nuclear and radiological engineering from Georgia Institute of Technology and a master's degree in business administration from Longwood University. Welcome, Chris. Have you got anything you'd like to say to the commission?
I just want to say hello and thanks for having me here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hope you guys enjoyed your journey here with HRSD and you've joined a great organization. We look forward to having you guys on board with us, contributing to the team.
Okay, agenda item number two, consent agenda. A recommended action is to approve the consent agenda. As you can see, we have four items on there, and staff's not aware of any item that we pulled out or discussed separately.
Okay, is there any discussion?
I can't believe there are only four items.
They get second. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
Elison?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Wallace?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Tarosky?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Agenda item number 3. Subject is the Atlantic Treatment Plant Emergency Odor Control Repairs, Additional Appropriation, Task Order, Contract Change Order. Recommended actions are to appropriate additional funding in the amount of $650,000, approve a task order with HDR Engineering Incorporated in the amount of $212,243, and approve a change order to the contract with Crowder Construction Company in the amount of $948,831. If y'all will recall, on January 31st, 2022, there was a fire on train 1 on the odor control system at the Atlantic Treatment Plant, that was likely due to the fan motor or the belt. After extensive investigation, we determined that the extent of the damage was greater than originally anticipated. Originally, we thought it was limited to the fan and motor, as well as the adjacent fiberglass ductwork electrical wiring. But what we found was it was determined that scrubber number 2 vessel, including the interior media and the disc eliminators and all that. So this is requesting additional money to make those repairs and to work.
Steve, let me ask you a question. Were we pursuing some insurance?
We are. So we filed a claim with the insurance company. It got it. We're keeping them apprised of the status of construction.
So are we going to? Sounds like, in looking at this, that we're going to go ahead, do the repair of the cost, and then just try to recoup money from insurance at a later date.
Correct. And that fire was in January, July of 2022. Oh, yeah. Last July, July 31st. Okay.
We understood.
July
of 2022. I can.
Oh, another one. All right. Any further discussion on this?
Move for approval.
Thank you, Commissioner Levin.
Sir, a second.
Second.
Thank you.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. A roll call.
Elison?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Wallace?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Aye.
Tarosky?
Yes.
Templeman?
Aye.
And Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Agenda item number 4. The subject is the Atlantic Treatment Plant Reliability and Odor Control Improvements. For the ATP liquid side odor evaluation improvements, the ATP gravity belt thickener and pre-dewatering polymer improvements, the ATP odor and solids improvements 2023, and the ATP curing facility and pad improvements contract. The recommended action is to award a contract to Black & Veatch Corporation in the amount of $809,911 for the ATP liquid side odor evaluation improvements project, to award a contract to Black & Veatch Corporation for the ATV gravity belt and pre-dewatering polymer project, to award a contract to Black & Veatch Corporation in the amount of $1,049,500 for the ATP odor and solids improvements 2023 project, and to award to Black & Veatch Corporation for the ATP solids curing facility in Pattonsburg. So in 2022, if you guys will recall, we had significant odor control challenges at the Atlantic Treatment Plant after we closed the Chesapeake Reservoir Treatment Plant. We diverted that flow to Atlantic, and after we implemented a new solids management system. As a result, we created several new CIP projects to address the odor issues and the solids management challenges we were having. And although these efforts are listed as separate projects, it will bid as one in an effort to really facilitate this project as long as fast as possible. So these are contracts requesting approval for the preliminary engineering phase for each of these projects. Now, items B and D, we didn't list the dollar amounts because they're less than $200,000. They don't need your approval, but item B is for an award of $77,593, and D is for an award of $123,593.
Everyone clear on what we're voting on here? Yeah. Is there any discussion? Yeah. A motion.
Elison.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second
down to the table.
Thank you. All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. By roll call.
Ellison?
Aye.
Blunt?
Yes.
Walla?
Yes.
Livingston?
Yes.
Stern?
Aye.
Tarofsky?
Aye.
Templeman?
Aye.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Agenda item number 5, the subject is the James River Land Improvements Phase 1 Additional Appropriation, Contract Award, and Task Order. Recommended actions, are to appropriate additional funding in the amount of $7,759,579, award a contract to Howard Brothers Contractor Incorporated in the amount of $7,787,368, and approve a task order with Vaness Hangin Russell Incorporated in the amount of $787,920. Apologies for the company because I'm sure I butchered it. So if the commission will recall, NatureSD approved an agreement with the city of Newport News in 2020 to purchase approximately 10 acres of land adjacent to the James River Creek. And as part of that purchase, the HRSD committed to design and construct public access trails that will be operated and maintained by the city of Newport News. So this project will provide for the design and construction improvements to the land surrounding the James River Treatment Plant, including the development of nearly 1 mile of the Lincoln Park. If you'll notice, the engineer's estimate of a low bid compared to the engineer's estimate is significantly different. And the standard pricing comparisons that the engineer used for the project really didn't take into account the constricted access of having to formulate a position to the ordering of materials back in the world. All these issues are complicating the design and construction of this project. And given the construction and the time constraint, we don't see a way to lower the cost associated with this. If you look up at the map, everything in purple is the phase of the contract that we're talking
about. Can we go back to the bids?
Bruce, is Howard Brothers, I haven't been part of them.
They are a smaller firm. We have worked with them in the past. I believe they've done some vertical construction. I think they might build one of the buildings for us. So they do a lot of different work for us, and the other bidders are known to us too. So I feel like we've got good competition on there.
Any of the others, I just think.
Yeah.
This is Commissioner Glenn. Why do we have the estimate is so low compared to the actual bids?
I could give you a lot of good reasons, but at the end of the day, I think the engineer just blew this one. The complexities of the project are such that they're working in a very tight site, but the number of other contractors working on the water, working through just challenging areas, really the engineer, these factors were known. So the engineer probably should have, included that in their pricing. But that's kind of hard to estimate that as an engineer. How much risk do you want to put into a price estimate based on the challenges, the limitations of the site? But we do have 3 or 4 contractors all working in this very tight site. And these bidders know the challenges they'll have to do this project. I just feel like the engineer, we have 4 very competitive bids from, a little under 8 million to 14 million. So we have good pricing there, so I would discount the engineer's estimate in this case, unfortunately. To do these estimates, and it really wasn't indicative of what we're seeing today.
Do you have any concern that the next 2 bids are $2 million more than the winning bid?
They reached out to Howard Brothers and confirmed their bid. We have worked with them in the past. I think it's a project that we should award to them. There will be challenges, but I would not exclude Howard Brothers at this point. We think it's a reasonable bid.
Have they, in previous projects, hit us up with a lot of change orders?
Commissioner Glenn, my recollection was they had completed 1 project for us, and it was effective. They did well. So they don't have a track record of change orders or that type of thing.
Do you call the size of that contract?
Off the top of my head, no. I can follow up with that and just send you an email through Jennifer if you'd like more information, background. But we did check the references. We are aware of the firm. They have worked for us in the past. I believe they're out of the Richmond area, if I'm not mistaken. We don't build trails on a regular basis, so we don't have a huge track record with this type of project.
Yeah, if you don't mind, just those two bits of information, when the contract was performed, and then the amount of it, just out of curiosity.
Look at that information, Dean.
Thank you.
What is the width of this trail? Do you recall?
I would be guessing. It's a pathway. It's a trail. I'll show you on the map here. Just go to that picture. So it's this portion here. It's this portion of the trail, and it goes over the water for a way. So there's piles. It sits out over the water through this section here. And then it's a land portion, back through the woods through here. So it's wide. It's a fairly wide trail. I'd say 12 to 15 feet would be my estimate. It's a pathway.
Are we also talking about to the right of where you?
Yeah, this is going to be phase two.
Okay, so we're only talking about phase one.
Phase one is this portion here. Yeah.
I'm just saying, man, you can build a road for that kind of cost. Just seems to be awfully high.
This is, we're doing work, in the water.
Yeah, Peter worked with
it. Okay, yeah. As well.
So phase two, is that also a lot of peer work?
Not as much. It's more inland. There is some shore. They're trying to make it as attractive as they can, so they're pushing it right along the shoreline here, but I believe it's a little further in. And it might be a little bit towards this edge.
This is what we agreed to with City of Newport News.
It is.
To gain the site, right?
It is. Keep in mind, we've got the major $500 million contractor here. We're drilling wells in here. We've got another shoreline project that we're just completing now. So we've got a whole bunch of folks working in this area.
Okay, so that begs, for me, I have to ask the question, should phase two not have come before phase one in order to alleviate travel?
Good question. Phase one is ready to go. We've got some other things. I believe the phase two work also had some connections with the well work that's being done over here. We're trying to align some of the wells and the piping associated with that with phase two. So we want to make sure we're not putting, we were very thoughtful about where those well locations would go, plus the piping. We want to do that at the appropriate time. So it was more important that we were able to bid this now. We're able to get that done. This portion is going to have to wait because we've got just the wells themselves and the associated piping. We want to make sure that that's done in a thoughtful way. We don't want to be ripping off our trail that will just fail. We try to align it too close so we can get money to get back to the park.
Hey, Bruce, it's Commissioner Glenn. One last question regarding the scope of that, of their work. Does that include, I don't want to say amenities, but does it have on the elevated portions, like railings, and does it have lighting? Does it, I'm just trying to figure out what the driving cost of this is.
Obviously, and I don't believe there's any lighting as part of the project.
Lauren is online.
Lauren, Lauren, would you like to add anything to the trail?
Sure, Bruce. Good morning, Commissioner Glenn. The trail itself, I think there was a question about width too. It's wide enough to ride a maintenance gator size because the City of Newport News will be maintaining the trails going forward. On the portion on the kind of northwest side of the city of HRSD's Newport James River treatment plant facility, there'll be a lot of boardwalk pathway above the wetlands. So a large portion of that will be boardwalk. There'll be also boardwalk that goes over wetlands just east south of James River treatment plant as well to kind of cross right past where the, you can see in this map where the outfall is called out in green. That's also boardwalk area. The rest of it is a wider multi-purpose trail. Those boardwalk pieces around the treatment plant are only for intended for footpath traffic only, but the city asked it to be just barely wide enough to be able to do maintenance. So with the boardwalk, there's a lot of wood structure, handrails, some little nooks out There's minimal fencing on that side as well. Most of the rest of the trail that goes around the point and the highlands does not have fencing. Things like benches and trash cans and wayfinding signs are included. There's no other amenities like bathrooms or lighting. There's no lighting along it because the path technically and the park technically closes at dusk. One of the things that is also included, there's at least two, maybe three trailheads. So there are wayfinding places with some more architectural detail and some information that's at the marina all the way on the far end around the corner. And also in the parking area where the path reconnects to the existing trails. So there are some features along the way, but not no bathrooms, no lights. That's not included here.
Thank you. Any gazebos or outlooks?
I don't remember whether or not there's a couple. We talked about having bump outs along the trail. I'm not sure exactly what the trail design includes. I'm thinking specifically on the boardwalk area, where you're looking out over the water. There's no water access, but there is water visibility along there. And then just along City Farm, there is again a high place where they've built a place to have an outlook where you can view out towards the river, but no specific gazebos, no.
There is currently, right where she's pointing, right by the green chain, if you look on your computer, you can see the little bit of a gray. There is a pier. Currently in a small trail that goes up through those woods that's quite popular. It's a very, very beautiful area. And I think this is going to be a extremely popular trail because going up in the field in the very top portion, that is a dog walker trail. There are hundreds of people in the neighborhood all around that are walking around that particular area. And they're now going to come down along the water.
Heavily used, as we've seen with the construction going on. A lot of dog walkers.
Right. Lauren, this Commissioner Taraski, what's the lifespan of the boardwalk over that you described? Did they give you 30 years? What do they normally last?
I actually have not asked that question. I would think 30 is a reasonable estimate. But HRSD is not on the hook for long-term maintenance of the facility. Our commitment was the initial capital investment with the acknowledgement that that capital investment would be reasonable. So I think I'm in that 20, 30-year time range. Actually, 30 sounds maybe a bit long for wood over salt water, but maybe in the 20-year range sounds reasonable there.
Thank you.
We worked with the city on the review of this, making sure they're comfortable with what we're going to provide.
Yeah.
Bruce, do you recall what we paid for that site?
I do not recall. There was a lot of horse trading, a lot of different numbers going around. So there's some cash that traded hands. There's some property. We gave them the property next door. There was a whole lot of back and forth negotiations. It was a cash payment.
In reference to security, I think Lauren mentioned there's lack of fencing on that side. Is that correct?
Lauren, you want to add to that? I believe there's fencing around the plant, but there might not be fencing along the pathway itself.
Yeah, correct. There will be fencing around HRSD's facility, security, regular chain link fencing. There's some low fencing that's part of the trail along that portion in the more heavily wooded area on the northwest side of the plant. Otherwise, there's no other fencing along the remainder of the trail.
Okay, so we're not open-ended or exposed any in the surrounding of our plant, correct?
No, we have fencing totally surrounding the facility on all sides, whether or not there's a trail.
Okay. So I just want to make sure we get containment over our facility. That's all. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any further discussion? If not, do I have a motion?
Move for approval.
Is there a second?
Sure, second. Thank you.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
Ellison?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Koala?
Yes.
Levinston?
Aye.
Stern?
Aye.
Taraski?
Aye.
Templeman?
Aye.
Rodriguez?
Aye.
Thank
you. We will have to have a meeting down there in some way or another, picnic or something, but to walk a part of the trail.
Yeah, we could do the Duke James River Administration building on the conference room.
Yeah.
Okay, agenda item number six, excuse me, Nansman Swift Facility proposal compensation. Recommended action is to approve the proposal compensation at $500,000 for each responsive shortlisted team not selected for the Nansman Swift Facility project. So as you all know, the project will design and construct and commission the new advanced water treatment facilities necessary to convert highly treated wastewater from the Nansman treatment plant into Swift water. 22, the commission approved the use of design build project delivery for this project. The team's meeting to compete for this very large project will incur significant costs in developing their technical approach and to develop a contract cost limit for a complete proposal. So in accordance with HRC's procurement policy, proposal compensation may be used to provide the financial incentive to increase competition, encourage proposers to explore innovative ideas during the proposal stage, follow an industry standard. This helps follow an industry standard and processes used by other large public sector organizations, and it allows HRC to retain the rights to innovative ideas from unsuccessful proposers. So again, the recommended action is to approve the proposal compensation of $500,000 for each responsive shortlisted proposer.
Everyone understand what we're trying to achieve here.
I mean,
shortlist. How many
will
be on the shortlist?
I think you have some questions on this one. So, our target is typically to shortlist three firms.
Yeah.
On the James River project, we only shortlisted two firms because we really don't want to shortlist somebody that we feel strongly won't be able to compete, because it is a big cost initiative to go to the next stage. To put in a proposal, that effort isn't big, but to go to the next stage, to go through the process, to give us a price, to go through the technical proposals, the interviews, quite costly and time consuming. So our target is three. I think on the Swift Research Center, we shortlisted four, but we generally shoot for three. It tends to be the best number. If there's a real close between number three and number four, sometimes we'll shortlist four. If there's a big gap between number two and number three, sometimes we'll do two, but our target is three. We tend to get the best competition. We get the best outcome if we talk to three different firms, and we get the best ideas too. We don't want to shortlist 20 people because we're not really shortlisting at that point, and we're not making any headway, and then people drop off because they don't think they have a good chance. So if you think you're one in three, then you have a chance, you have an interest to continue. If you're one of five, maybe you don't want to play the game anymore. So we shoot for three.
Hey, Bruce, this is Jay. While you're up there, do you mind talking about the market and why we feel like this is important to do at this time, given the current market conditions?
Gladly. So we invited you all to attend our Swift Industry Day, which is this Thursday. So we are trying very hard to get a lot of interest in our projects. This economy, where we're sitting today, there's a lot of work, not a lot of big firms that can do that work. So we're competing against the DC Waters, the WSSCs, the Charlotte Waters to get these great contractors to compete for our work. So the pendulum has really swung. There was a time where you just put an ad in the newspaper and you get 20 people chasing your project. But this is this Nansman project. It's going to be a $500, $600 million project. There are very few. There might be five proposers out there that could even do this on the East Coast. So we're really trying to make sure they're going to be interested in our work. So this compensation is one way to get interest in our project. The Nansman ANRI project, the previous project that we're doing right now, we only had four proposers and we shortlisted three. And as you might guess, if you are shortlisted but don't get the work, eventually you might say, man, I don't want to compete anymore because I've missed it on two or three times. I can't keep making these huge investments. So we're trying to keep that interest up. The economy is very strong in our business. You know, you hear about the recession coming in this year and whatever. Not in the construction industry. There's a lack of skilled trades. There are, it's just a very tight market right now. And we really want proposers to compete for our project. If we only got one proposer on this project, on this SWIP project, it would be devastating for the project. Not only we don't get competition, but we might get a very large price that there's only one player competing for the work. So it's really important that we gain as much interest. We do that through proposal compensation. We do it through meetings. We do it through every way we can find to get interest in our project. The pendulum is way off to the side of the contractor side, and we really have to be kind of an owner of choice, somebody who people really want to work for. And this is one of a number of ways to do that.
Bruce, were these two that we're down to right now, were they part of the four from the prior?
We're not down to anyone yet. We haven't issued this proposal. So there are maybe three or four firms that are looking at the Nansman Swift project that we're aware of. Yeah. And we're doing everything we can to make sure they actually put in a proposal.
Okay, so this is not a gradient number. This is a number whether you come in second or third for Auburn to have a game.
Correct, for those teams that are second or third. And keep in mind, this is what we've seen on other projects. They spend about 1% of the value of the project chasing it. And we offer this value, which is about 0.1%. So we're going to give them kind of 10 cents on the dollar for what they're going to spend to chase the project. It's something. It shows a good faith on our part. And we're just trying to make our project as attractive as we can. We have to outcompete the other utilities on the East Coast to make them want to compete for our work.
I think it's a great policy. I just want to stay in line with the industry.
VDOT does it. We kind of learned from them a bit. Yeah, it was a couple million.
Even if you didn't get the best.
Right.
Very good. Any further questions, discussion? If not, do I have a motion to approve?
Approved.
Trusky second.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed? No.
Wilson?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Yes.
Levinson?
Yes.
Stern?
Aye.
Trusky?
Aye.
Templeman?
Aye.
Rodriguez?
Aye.
And commissioners, if I could ask everybody to speak up a little bit, especially the jet, in a way that's a little difficult to hear everybody.
That might be a good reason to move them. Newport News meetings over to the new plant once it's been. Item seven.
Okay, agenda item seven. Subject is the North Shore Gravity Sewer Improvements Phase 1, additional appropriation, contract award, and task order. Recommended actions are appropriate additional funding in the amount of $7,455,707. Award a contract to Bridgemead Civil Incorporated in the amount of $10,968,580 and approve a task order with Tetra Tech in the amount of
$577,738.37.
So this is a rehab action plan phase two project with a firm commitment finish date of 2025. This project provides for rehabilitation and replacement of gravity sewer infrastructure in various locations in Newport News, Williamsburg, and Hampton. We only received one bid. Because the bid exceeded the budget, the engineering department negotiated the price with the bidder for a negotiated price of $10,968,580. One of the main reasons for the pricing difference between the engineer's estimate, which you can see there, and the initial bid was a significant underestimate of the amount of pump and haul efforts that were required as part of this project. So, Bruce, have you got anything you want to go ahead and add to this one?
Badly. So this is a great example of when you get one bidder, what can happen. So this is a tricky project. It's there's a picture in your package that shows it's at seven different sites. We're doing sewer pipe rehab, replacing manholes. There's a whole bunch of sewer laterals that go into our line that we're replacing. And there's a bunch of connections into wet wells that we have to do. So it's a challenging project at a number of locations. Our goal when we put the project together was put enough of the project together to make it attractive to a number of bidders. So that was our goal. Of course, the challenge is we just had a single bidder. We worked with Perrin Lowbritter, Bridgemead Civil. They've been, they're going to do a great job for us. They've been very successful. They know what we need. They've done historically great work for us. So we feel really good about the quality of the work. Challenge, of course, was significantly over our estimate. And when we got into it, talking to the low bidder with our engineer, there were a lot of assumptions that the low bidder made about how long it would take to do all this bypass work. And it's a matter of whether you want to be aggressive or you want to be conservative. If you think it's going to take 3 days to do the manhole work, you might put 3 days of bypass. The bypass costs more than the work itself. So if you assume 20 days to do the bypass, then you're going to have a whole different number, which is what happened. The contractor assumed he was going to have to go back and make repairs, and just it was going to be a little more complicated than our engineer did. So their estimates were, yet the engineer had an estimate of $1 million for the bypassing work, and Bridgman Civil had $8 million in their bid for the bypass work. And so they're not going to take a very aggressive approach to this with the chance of losing a lot of money in this economy. That's where we're sitting today. That's the reality of where we are. So we've spent a lot of time, this was bid a while ago now. So we sat down with Bridgman, we said, what else could we do? Can we do this project differently? Is there any way to get what we need? This is a sewer rehab project, so we need an EPA consent order project. We can't just say, well, we're just not gonna do it. So we talked about, well, maybe if we broke this project into little parts or little pieces, maybe we'd get more bidders. We just convinced ourselves we'd get the same bidder and pay more if we broke it into little parts. So we just couldn't convince ourselves that we were going to get a better outcome. We did negotiate with Bridgman Civil to see if we could change the scope and work with them to see if we could save some money. And we saved $1 million or $2 million from the original bid price. And that was done by using some different types of plugs and isolation lines to work around the bypass area to make it a little more efficient. We even talked about maybe let HRSD staff do the bypassing with our own resources. We've got a lot of bypass pumps. We could do it ourselves in theory, but we'd have to pull all of our crews off of things that they need to do, maintenance work and other things to be able to do that. We just decided that really wasn't in our best interest. So we also talked about making this a time and materials effort for bypass work. But if you do that and the contractor isn't working quickly or as aggressively as they could, we might pay a whole lot even more for the bypass work. So they do take all the risk if they start with this work and there's a rain event or there's some other challenge. So that is kind of why we're paying somewhat of a premium for this project. You know, I'll be honest with you, at the end of the day, I think this project, we need to move forward, kind of hold our nose a little bit. It's an important project. We got a good contractor who is willing to do the work for us. There's only two or three contractors in our region that can do this type of work. It's just where we're sitting in the economy right now. But we've looked every way, 9 days of Sunday, to look for a better way to make this happen. We just could not find a better way to make this project happen.
Bruce, Commissioner Glenn, a couple questions for you. First, the estimate. Who performed the estimate?
Design engineer Tetra Tech helped with that estimate. And we did have them sit down with Bridgman Civil. We did have a discussion with our own staff and say, you know, is the estimate low? Is their number low? You know, at the end of the day, maybe the right answer is somewhere in between. If we'd had three bidders, who knows what the Bridgman estimate might have been compared to the other two. But with a single estimate, all you have is that price and the engineer's price. And the engineer was arguing that the bypass work could have done, maybe should have been done quicker, faster. And Bridgman Civil said, hey, I've done this work before for you guys. There's lots of complications. A lot of things can go wrong. This is what it's going to take if you ask me for a price to do this work that I'm not going to lose my shirt on, that I can feel comfortable making a profit. And the contractors right now in this industry, in this business, they're going to make sure that they're not going to lose money in this economy.
Sorry to interrupt you, but my question would be then, you know, Tetra Tech, we have this discussion all the time. They are three times lower than the final cost before negotiation. That's three times, not one, not two. So that would be on the egregious side. And if their explanation is, I don't find their explanation palatable. And I'm sure you don't either. Something had to really go wrong on their side or on the other side to be that much of a difference, or do you not see it that way?
I do see it that way. And as frustrating as you might be, I'm more frustrated, to be honest with you, because the engineer the engineer's estimate is something that the commission sees. You don't see all their design work, all the other things that go into a project, you see this estimate. So it brings into question the abilities of our consultants. So it's bothersome, very bothersome for me personally and professionally and for our program that we see the estimates being so far off. At the end of the day, I think there was just their estimate was what they had done. Tetra Tech's providing good service for us and lots of other projects across the board. And they've done a better job in estimating other projects. I think there was just some overly optimistic numbers in their bypass work. And there's some very conservative numbers by the single bidder that we had. So my guess is the right answer, if we had four or five bidders, we'd be somewhere in between those two numbers. But with one bidder, we really don't have that luxury to see where those other prices might be. So I am very frustrated with this. We've seen it on other projects. We see some good numbers. I'm not going to do my CIP briefing this month. We're going to wait till February because there's a lot of other things on the agenda today. But I'll share some other numbers with you on some of our other contracts and other bids over the past year. This is disappointing, and there was one previously that you just approved that was equally disappointing. So this is something I talk to our consultants all the time about. I promise you that.
No, and I appreciate, I really understand and hear your frustration as well. So thank you. I guess if we as commissioners and HRC as an organization, we have these relationships, and how do we hold their feet to the fire? Because I don't know what they're saying. Are they coming back to you with a bunch of, oh my gosh, we're really sorry, we messed up on this one. We've done a recent internal study on this and this is what we found out. Or are they just like, you know what? We missed this one, we'll move on to the next one. So I'm just curious what their response is to this and what our response should be to make sure that we can tighten, that we have some recourse, if that's a word we can use.
So I do talk to senior leaders at these organizations and have relationships. So we'll talk to them and we'll continue to talk to them. We have regular meetings, annual meetings with our consultants to talk about the lessons learned across the board, how we can improve, how we can do better. If we'd had five bids and we had the engineer's estimate real low, I'd feel a little stronger that the engineer was way off. With one bid, it's really hard to know. It's like he said, she said, right? Or you're competing one against the other. It's really hard to know if the engineer was truly off or did we get just one high bid. At the end of the day, you just don't have enough information to really make a good decision here. On that previous project that we talked about, there were three or four bidders and the engineer was low. Significantly, though, I feel worse about that one actually than this one, because we had the industry was telling us this is what it should be, and the engineer was real low. In this case, we only had a single bidder, so it's really hard to know for sure if we had three or four bidders where that price would have come in. And guess what? At the end of the day, if the single bidder has an inkling that they might be the only bidder, you tend to pay a premium. But there's another reason why you have one bidder is because the project's really complicated and difficult. People that might have bid it step away. So there's some contributing factors there.
Okay, thank you.
How do we evaluate the engineers? How do we select the engineers for these projects? How are they selected?
So it's a purely qualifications-based selection. They submit qualifications on comparable projects. They then go through an interview process. They convince us that they have the skills and capabilities to do the work for us. We hire them sometimes on individual projects, as this was the case, and then other times we hire them through an annual services contract where they show they've got the capability of doing lots of similar work. So we use either an annual services contract with our consultant or we do it on an individual project by project basis. So it depends on the project and the size, but we typically hire the engineer on qualifications and then we negotiate the price as we go. We've had some issues with other consultants where they've consistently been off on their pricing. And we've had discussions with those folks about how are you going to change your business model? How are you going to do something different? And a lot of them, what they've done is they brought contractors in to help them be better at estimating. But guess what? The contractors don't want to do that for a living. They want to build work. They don't want to spend time doing an estimate for a project they can't do. So to get these consultants to do better, it's just a bit of a challenge. And it's just part of my job to make sure they do that. And it's just a continuous process of doing better the next time.
So there was competition in this selection of the engineer, right?
Yep.
Could not the engineer do similar to what we're doing with these large projects where they pay contractors to come in and give them the information that they need? Could that not be a process that they go through? I know we don't have anything to do with it, but if they want to continue to get work from us, then they need to do a better job of what they're presenting to us now.
Absolutely. They're finding it hard to get.
We cannot continue to go at this rate.
Agreed.
We got to change our dynamics.
Agreed. It's particularly hard when you only have two, because we're really counting on the engineer's estimate when we only have one price. When we have five bids, you know you've got a market price for the work. In this case, you really don't, because you've only got a single price. So it's a bigger challenge. I really hate it when I only see one bidder for lots of reasons.
I agree with that, and I understand that process, but the process that I'm getting to is an engineer's estimate. I mean, today, just one day, we've had two estimates that are come in twice or three times more than what the estimate was. I start questioning my line, are we getting the value that we need from the engineer?
Great point. There's a lot of engineers listening to this conversation.
Well,
you're being heard. I'll be telling them too.
That's fine. In the future, from this point forward, we need to change the dynamics of how we hire. We need the criteria. I like to put a checklist together on these engineers. I want to know what their estimates are, how much they're missing by.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to make an adjustment as to who we hire in the future based on that.
I'd say it's one important factor of many that we can't. We just pick that as the issue. The only decision making, you might not have a good outcome.
I somewhat agree with that. I'm not wholeheartedly bought into that
solution.
I think you need to hold their feet in the fire. They want to come in and do the work for it. Need to do a better job. I mean, that, to me, they're just throwing numbers on the board. They're mailing it in. They're not actually scrutinizing the project. I want these engineers to do a better job of the product that we're getting today.
I agree with that.
Commissioner Glenn, to add, I agree with Commissioner Rodriguez that there needs to be some metric, some way we can measure their performance. And we just can't let them continue to, and again, this may be the environment that we're in, but this has kind of been a theme for, not a theme, but it happens more often than I thought it would be. And it depends on what environment we're in, but you know, having two in, just in this, for this meeting, or I hope this isn't a sign of things to come.
I'll add that that'll be on my agenda for next month, my CFP briefing. I'll give you some more information on that.
Let me just play this one out there. If this would have been a design build, do you think it would have come back with better product?
Well, we would have gotten three short, we would have had three firms. Hopefully we would have had three firms that were shortlisted, and we would have been partially based on their price, would have been the selection. So we would hope that we would get three proposals, and with a little more competition, you tend to get better pricing as a general rule. We really have only two or three contractors that do this type of work in the region: Bridgman Civil, Tidewater Utility, and sometimes there's one or two others that show up. But those three, where we're sitting today, a lot of the smaller pipe contractors have gone out of business over the years, and that's where we are today.
So now the next question that leads me to is, if we'd broke it down into two projects a piece and had three different bids for three different projects, would that have, you think that would have lowered the cost versus throwing them all together?
The challenge is we've only got two or three contractors that can do the work in the region. So if you make it smaller, you'd be less likely to get someone from out of the region. So you're only going to get Bridgman Civil, Tidewater Utility to bid on each of those projects. And when you break one project into three parts, you tend to pay more than if you bid it as one project, because they have some economies and scale doing it that way. We talked about rebidding it, canceling the project, but we just weren't convinced that
at the end of the day, well, I wasn't even going to talk to you about more money being spent on this project. It's kind of a crapshoot of it, of knowing the market, knowing where the people are and where their interests lie. But it's a challenging time to build things. It's my job to take those challenges on, but it's a challenging time.
I think we've been on you enough. I think you know what we want to do. Any further discussion? Do I have a motion to approve? Yeah. All right. No motion. Do we want to table this and bring it to another month? Further discussion? What's the pleasure of the board?
That my concern is that Bruce did say that this is very important work that has to be done. It's not
so, Bruce, can you talk about the rehab action plan phase two this year?
So this is a phase two rehab action plan project. Important that we move it forward. We've got till 2025 to get it done.
Is that January or December?
I think it's mid-year, May. The problem is, though, we've taken a few months to bring this to you because we were negotiating with Bridgman Civil. If we table this another month, he, in theory, would have the right to ask for a revisit of these costs. If prices had gone up since his bid, hopefully he wouldn't, but I can't guarantee that this, when I bring this next month, it could be more money because he has to hold his bid, I believe, for 90 days. And we've been negotiating with him to get this price down. I can't guarantee if we table it another month that we'll have a better answer for him.
Bruce, what's your feeling on the schedule in the 2025 date for all of these different projects?
That's going to be my CFP briefing next month, but we have already reached out to EPA and asked for a time extension on 6 or 7 of these projects. This wasn't one of them, but as we slide these projects back towards the end, there's always a chance that more of these projects could be late, and we're in the middle of negotiating a time extension with EPA on 6 projects that we think are likely to be late. This one isn't on the list at this point in time. It just, 1 month isn't the end of the world on this project, but I don't think I'm gonna have a better answer for you next month.
Yeah, but worse.
I might.
All right, move for approval,
gentlemen. Second motion. Yeah. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed,
aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Wallach?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Aye.
Turovsky?
Aye.
Templeman?
Aye.
Rodriguez?
Aye. And before we move on to item 8. Bruce, I think you see the frustration we have here, sitting here for fiduciary responsibilities. I think something needs to be done differently in the future, so we'll be looking for some correction actions in the future.
Good, got it. Very clear on that. Thank you,
sir. Item 8.
Okay, thank you. Subject is the Suffolk Compensation Replacement Real Estate Acquisition Easement Interest at 619 East Pinner Street in Suffolk. The recommended action is to approve the acquisition of a 30-foot permanent utility easement located at 619 East Pinner Street in Suffolk and associated acquisition costs of $40,000 in accordance with the terms and conditions of the purchase agreement with the Hampton Roads Fox Company Incorporated, and authorize the general manager to execute the same and related acquisition documents in accordance with those terms and conditions. Substantially as presented, together with such changes and modifications and deletions as the general manager may deem necessary. This is also a rehab action plan phase two project with a 2025 completion date. This project will design and construct 2 pump stations in lieu of constructing 1 replacement Suffolk pump station. The benefit of the 2 pump station scenario includes abandonment of over 7,000 linear feet of gravity sewer and 34 manhole along Shingle Creek. So the purchase agreement between HRSD and the Hampton Roads Box Company was reviewed by staff and real estate legal counsel in the plat, and that depict the project and easement locations.
Any discussion, questions? Is there a motion to approve?
Move to approve.
Turovsky, second.
First and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those in favor, no.
Ellison?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Wallach?
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Aye.
Taraski.
Aye.
Templeman.
Aye.
And Rodriguez.
Aye.
At this point, before we move forward, we're going to kind of take a 10-minute break.
Okay, agenda item number 9. Subject is US EPA consent decree annual public meeting. No action is required. I'm going to turn it over to Jay Burness, who's going to give you guys a high level overview of meeting that we're having later this afternoon.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Commissioners, and I'm sorry I couldn't be there with you today. Still at home battling the flu. Hopefully I'm halfway through it. With this presentation, I'm just going to give you a high-level overview of what I'll be presenting at 1:30 today. Next slide, please. This is the agenda, portions of the agenda. This is actually taken from the consent decree of the things that we are supposed to be talking about at this annual meeting. Next slide. You already know about HRSD. Next slide. And I do love this slide. I think I stole it from Lauren, particularly with the public, to remind them before 1940, this is what was happening, was raw sewage was going into these ditches and going straight out to the bay. So I think this is an important slide to remind them what it would be like without HRSD and to reinforce our mission and vision. Next slide. I also want to make sure, I'm not sure how many people from the public will actually attend this afternoon, but I do want to make sure they have a good understanding of the sanitary sewer system and how water gets into the system and what does cause an SSO. Next slide, please. And then define what an SSO is. Again, just with the audience being the public, not sure if they even know what this is. Talk about the different causes. I highlighted the, put in bold the ones that are more specific to the consent decree. Next slide. Also wanna let them know what the consent decree is. It's all based on the Clean Water Act and that intended to eliminate pollutants to navigable waters, but specifically for us to ensure that we have adequate capacity to convey and treat wet weather sewer overflows. And then talk about how it was that our consent decree converted into an integrated plan and how the integrated plan allows consent decree communities to prioritize the capital investments within that community. Next slide, please. I do want to spend a little bit of time on this. I'm not sure I've shown this to the commission, but what I've really tried to do is create an infographic that talks about the evolution of how our consent decree became an integrated plan. So in November of 2006, EPA sent us a 308 letter. Essentially, that is the start of any consent decree action is an EPA 308 letter. Essentially, they're asking for a bunch of data from the utility that they can essentially use against us in the consent decree proceedings. So between that 2020 from 2006 to 2017, we got our MOM program approved. We built our regional hydraulic model, but we also developed, and with the hydraulic model, we developed the regional wet weather management plan. Initially, it was designed at a $2.8 billion wet weather plan, but it wasn't until we convinced the localities that if we took a regionalized approach, that we could save $1 billion. That means in the original approach, each city was gonna have to do their own sets of projects and meet their own thresholds. But what we proposed is if we took a regional approach, the localities wouldn't have to do that, and HRSD could control where those projects would be done. And so that's how we saved the region $1 billion. So that's 2017. So on a parallel path, in 2014, we started a feasibility study. At the time it was called an aquifer replenishment program, where we wanted to see if, you know, it was even feasible to pump, take wastewater to drinking water quality and pump it into the ground. And what we found was, as the commission already knows, is that there's significant benefits that we determined from that feasibility study. And during that time, during the alternatives analysis, we had proposed this with the EPA, and they agreed. They said, hey, this is a great project. So in 2017, we got the Fourth Amendment to our consent decree, which essentially said that they allowed us to look into converting our consent decree into an integrated plan. Also, along the same time on a parallel path, we were doing pilot work on the different treatment trains, comparing RO to the GAC train. In 2018, we built a demonstration facility, and then we've continued with design. So another thing that happened in 2017 is once we got the Fourth Amendment signed with EPA, one of the things during the feasibility study we learned with SWIFT was that we would generate a significant number of nutrient credits because millions of pounds of nitrogen phosphorus wouldn't be going into the bay anymore. While at the same time, the localities were staring down having to do stormwater retrofits by 2025. And in 2017, they had estimated that these retrofits would cost the region $1.8 billion because they're very invasive. And they all agreed. And so we established these locality trading agreements with all localities in HRSD with all these nutrient credits, assuming that SWIFT moves forward. And then fast forward to February 8th, 2022, that's when our integrated plan was signed by the judge. So what does the integrated plan say? Next slide, please. This is a high level summary of our integrated plan. Again, in phase one, we did our MOM program, the model, the wet weather plan, and the rehab action plan, which has to be done by May of 2025. And you heard me talk about the regional wet weather management plan at $1.8 billion. We've broken that up into two high priority projects, broken up into two decades. The first decade needs to be done by 2030, and that removes 47% of the modeled overflow volume. And then in the second decade, the total modeled overflow volume would be reduced by 69% by 2040. And so if you do the quick math, you can see it would cost us $1.4 billion to remove that remaining 31% of modeled overflow volume. And that's where the integrated plan comes into play. It allows the community to prioritize the capital investments that have the highest economic benefit. And so for us, that's SWIFT. And so in our integrated plan, we are required to spend over $1 billion on SWIFT. And it's not specific on any specific projects or flow. We just have to spend over $1 billion on SWIFT by 2032. And then the last part of our plan is we've got to spend $10 million on microbial source tracking in each decade by 2030 and by 2040. Next slide, please. So as part of the first phase, again, we did do a MOM program, our Management Operations and Maintenance Program. Essentially, the purpose of that is to ensure that we have efficient operations of our wastewater system. And all the localities have the same requirement to have a strong MOM program. So ours was approved by EPA in 2011. It gets regular reviews. And this performance tracking is something we do on a periodic basis to make sure we will comply. So next slide, please. And then you'll see with all these different metrics that we have complied since 2012, whether it's force main inspections, gravity sewer inspections, all of those things, we've complied every year. All of our targets have been met. Next slide, please. On the again, the consent decree is really based on capacitor-related SSOs. And in fiscal year 22 was the first time in many years, I think since 2008 or some, it's been a long time since we had zero capacitor related overflows. The overflow volumes, I think for the most part for fiscal year 22 was aging infrastructure, like a line break is what caused that. But if you look at the how much flow is conveyed, 49.3 billion gallons, and you divide that by the overflow volume lost, we've treated over 99.99% of the volume. So we've only lost 0.00156% of the volume that was conveyed to us. So again, another reason why when you look at comparing spending $1 billion on SWIFT to SSOs, SWIFT obviously gives us the higher environmental benefit. Next slide, please. Another part of the phase one is our rehab action plan. These are projects that came out of the condition assessment program. It was something that was approved by EPA in 2015. The total cost of that program right now stands at $332 million. We've done phase zero and phase one. We're in the middle of phase two. It's 28% in construction or complete. Next. And I talked about the two high priority projects. The first phase is primarily on the south side with a small group of projects on the peninsula next. And then in phase two, a much broader reach of projects for the second phase of the high priority projects next. And then we can skip this slide. I think the commission knows how important SWIFT is and all the great benefits. And then microbial source tracking. Just as a reminder, we use DNA markers to determine when we do water quality testing in a waterway, if it's from a human source, or because what we want to make sure it's not from runoff from, you know, those geese, those Dagon geese and dogs or anything else that's causing bacterial impairments in the waterway. Because if it is human, we go up waterways and we do the find and fix to look for where it's coming up from. Obviously, the only way it would be coming out is through a leaky sewer. So we're going to be spending a lot of money and time on the microbial source tracking program because it really gets at the heart of the clean water program, which is having clean waterways. Next slide, please. And then we do continue to coordinate with localities, especially in this past year. We had a number of meetings with the capacity team. I meet monthly with the director of utilities. We all share data. And again, at the request of the locality, we do the microbial source tracking. Next. And we do involve the public. Our website is kept up to date. We do an annual newsletter. I think it's released every March. This annual presentation is held each January. And if there are significant SSO occurs, we do focused public outreach and do news releases and post it on our social media. We also do open house meetings for the construction projects related to consent decree and all of our construction projects. And we do presentations to civic business and community groups. Next slide, please. But there are some uncertainties. In terms of the long-term trend in I&I, we're not sure how sea level rise and recurrent flooding may impact I&I moving into the future. We're not sure how growth is going to change on how we built our regional hydraulic model and the assumptions we made there. We're also not sure if a future BRAC could change the DOD facilities in our region. The economy, as you know, many people know that it's in a lot of flux right now. There's a recession that's a high probability of recession for this year. And then for the regional environmental public health priorities could change. From the environmental side, we are keeping an eye on PFAS. Those regulations should be coming out soon. And who knows if that becomes the number one priority in our region. And who knows if there's another pandemic looming on the horizon. Next slide, please. And then I'll just breeze through this. These are just steps. This is required in the consent decree about different things that the public can do to protect our receiving waters. Next slide. And I did include my dog in this. That's my dog, Maisie. And this is to remind people to pick up their animal waste and to remind people of the boater pump out we do. Next. And to talk about not flushing pharmaceuticals down the drain and not to put grease down the drain either. Next. And just a quick summary and an overview, we have been submitting all of our reports on time. We continue to meet our MOM performance measures. We are in the middle of negotiating a rehab action plan, some minor changes to that and to the high priority program, but both of those are in progress. The James River SWIFT is under design / construction. Nansman SWIFT is under design and MST is ongoing. Next, and I think that's it. So that's a quick overview of what I'll be showing at 1:30. Anybody have any questions?
Any questions? Yeah, I've just got one. But how is our rapport with EPA? How are things progressing? I know we were contentious at one time, but it seems to have evened out. We seem to be on the same page.
That's actually a great question because we were on a call with them yesterday and walked them through our proposed changes that Bruce had talked about a little bit earlier. They seem to be on board. I mean, I think one of the big sells for us with EPA is that we are a high performing utility and we're always trying to do the right thing and we're always trying to go above and beyond. And We asked them to just recognize that. So I think we had a good meeting with them yesterday, and we're trying to define that path forward on how we can get some of the changes that we had requested yesterday to be codified without having to go through a full-blown modification with it, which if you saw the Fifth Amendment, how long that took, I think that took 2 to 3 years to get that one through. So they're trying to figure out a path forward for us. But I do think, to your point, that our relationship with them is strong.
And Melissa, is that the next issue coming down line that we need to tackle? Is that something we're looking forward in the future?
Yeah, specific to EPA is our request to, there are four specific items with them on some of the changes we wanted to, some minor modifications we wanted to make. And a lot of it is due to, we are just trying to do the right thing. We think it's more logical to do, you know, some of the high priority two projects in high priority one and move them, you know, back and forth and to ask for these deadline extensions because these are historic headwinds we're facing with inflation, supply chain, staffing shortages, things like that. So I think we presented a pretty strong case, but that is the next thing with EPA is working with them on that. On just on the consent decree side, the next big, actually the, probably the, another big EPA thing is when they release the PFAS regulation. So that's another thing we're keeping an eye out for.
What I'm worried about, is that gonna affect SWIFT any at all, do you think?
It depends. It depends what the requirement is. But I mean, the beauty of SWIFT is it includes GAC, which is one of the two known technologies by EPA to remove PFAS.
Very good, thank you.
But the other issue with PFAS is it's also in biosolids as well. So it all depends on what the regulation says. So that's why, you know, everyone is just, and it's not just HRSD, it's the drinking water utilities as well. So it's both water and wastewater utilities are keeping an eye on this.
I think it's more prevalent in the water itself, but I wonder about the discharge we do into the aquifer, if that's going to present a problem for us in the future. But it sounds like on that prior to a discharge. So, yeah. Thank you, sir. Any other questions? Thank you, Jay. Hope you feel better, buddy. All right, Mike. Item number 10. Unfinished business.
I'm aware of any.
Item 11, any new business? All right, go to item 12, commissioner comments. Any comments from our commission? Hearing none, we'll move to 13, public. All right, informational items. Steve, you got anything on that?
You have the reports. If there are any questions, you'd be happy to try to address those. Also included in there is the wastewater surveillance report and the internal audit report. Last thing they looked at was procedures around the Freedom of Information Act.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move to item 15. That's a closed meeting. I think it's all in your previous notes, so this time I'm going to read required documentation to go in a closed meeting. In accordance with section 2.2-3712A of the Code of Virginia, a motion is needed that we go into closed session meeting to consider general matters annual performance review as provided for section 2.2-3711A. Do I have a motion?
Move.
Is there a second?
Tarowski, second.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
Ellison?
Aye.
Glenn?
Yes.
Avalo?
Yes.
Levinston?
Aye.
Stern?
Aye.
Tarowski?
Aye.
Templeman? Aye. And Rodriguez?
Aye.
All right. For those of you that are still on the call, you will not hear anything until we come back from the closed session, which could be, you know, a half hour or more.
All right. Thank y'all for staying on board. Appreciate your support. I'm going to reconvene the meeting pursuant to section 2.2-3712D of Code of Virginia. A roll call vote.
Yes.
Yeah. Is will be conducted certified at the best of commission members' knowledge. Only public business matters lawfully exempted in open meeting requirements under this chapter, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered. Any commissioner who believes this was a departure from these two requirements shall state prior to the vote and indicating substance of that departure. Please say yes if you agree and no exceptions. After Ms. Cassio calls your name.
All right, Ellison.
Yes.
Glenn.
Yes.
Walla.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Taroski.
Yes.
Templeman.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Do we have a motion?
Yes.
Closed session.
Motion from Commissioner Templeman. Motion to approve an amendment to Section 3A of the General Manager's contract to modify the step parameters in setting and determining the General Manager's annual compensation, and to approve an increase in the General Manager's annual compensation for his first anniversary date to $260,000.
Second.
Stern, second.
Got
it.
Okay.
I got Rick. Yeah.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. By roll call.
Ellison.
Yes.
Glenn.
Yes.
Wallen.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Aye.
Taroski.
Aye.
Templeman.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Aye. All right. Motion approved. Any further discussion? Any comments? Okay. Hearing none, meeting break, RSD is adjourned.